everybody. I'm John Rosania, VP at Clean, and I'm chatting with my good friend, Dr. Amy Myers. This is the first podcast in a continuing series of podcasts with Dr. Myers, where we explore the cutting-edge research of progressive medicine and how we can best apply these insights to our health and live vibrantly. Dr. Myers is the founder and medical director of Austin Ultra Health, a functional medicine clinic in Austin, Texas. She's also a medical doctor with extensive training in functional medicine, integrative medicine, and nutrition. So, Amy, you there?
I'm here.
Howdy, Amy. How you doing today?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Good, good. So, Amy, this first podcast, we wanted to sort of give people out there, all our listeners, a snapshot of who you are, a little bit about your perspective. And then as we continue on with the podcast, we'll go into more specific topics that really address the sort of cutting edge of health right now. So I wanted to start off a little bit just by getting a little bit of your story and giving people once again a kind of a sense of your perspective and where you're coming from as a doctor. So kind of just to start off, just wondering a little bit about where your sort of first interest in medicine came from.
Well, I don't know if I would call it medicine, but it certainly was in health and nutrition. My parents growing up were quote-unquote hippies. It was the early 70s, and my mother made homemade whole wheat bread, and we made homemade yogurt, and we grew sprouts, and we had a garden, and there were no kids' meals. It was very much we ate as a family. There was very little sugar in the house, and my mother taught yoga, and I would go with her to the YMCA and do yoga classes. So my father was a professor of international studies, and his focus was in China and Asia. And so we had a lot of Chinese graduate students around the house growing up. And whenever we'd get sick, my father would give us actually Chinese herbs. And so I sort of grew up with a holistic mentality surrounding, you know, food as medicine and you know, your health surrounded by food and natural remedies from China.
Cool, cool. So I can just hear from that you have a story that's different than many people in the United States, especially growing up. I know myself growing up, I grew up in the suburbs, and although my parents were kind of relatively interested in health, especially my father, you know, we were still kind of eating a kind of normal standard American diet. So it seems like you had a kind of really different experience. So I'm wondering there when you were growing up, you know, eating these whole foods and all this, what was that like?
Well, it was great. I mean, you know, I didn't know any different. I mean, within my family, my mother and father were kind of known to be a little different than the rest of our extended family and were known to be healthy. My parents jogged before really anybody was jogging. And like I said, my mother taught yoga. But it's very interesting. And then my parents actually divorced and my father remarried, and he married a woman who was a vegetarian. And so then at the age of 14, I became a vegetarian. And I think the really interesting part of my story is though I was eating all this perceivably very healthy food, right? I mean, whole foods. I grew up on brown rice. I never had white rice. I grew up, you know, eating tofu. And then of course, when I became a vegetarian, I was eating a lot of soy products. And I continued to eat dairy. And then I ate things like, I wasn't making my bread, but I was buying bread, and I was buying Ezekiel bread, which is a sprouted whole wheat bread. And so I was eating all these foods that were perceivably the healthiest foods that somebody could eat. And I'm sure we'll get into this, but briefly, I then my second year of medical school became very sick with an autoimmune disease and realized that much of what I was eating for me was actually the wrong food. So I think that was really the biggest wake up point in all of this. And I know we'll get more into it as we go about, you know, food is medicine, but you could be eating even perceivably healthy things, but they might not be the right things for you. And really determining what are the right things for you.
So, Amy, you also, I mean, you've taught organic farming and nutrition, and you spent time as a Peace Corps volunteer in Paraguay. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? And maybe a little bit, I'm wondering, did you sort of connect with that culture there, and especially their use of plants as medicine, food as medicine as well?
I did. I mean, I really felt like I went into college and I got very involved in a lot of organizations. I won this highest leadership award of my college. I was president of many, many organizations and graduated and actually went into banking. And after 2 years left, it really felt like I wasn't, you know, I wasn't doing anything to make the world a better place. And I, with my father's interest in international studies, and I had been exposed to a lot of different cultures growing up, I was very interested in seeing the world. And so I thought the Peace Corps would be a great way to sort of kill two birds with one stone, see the world, help people, and you know, also get back to nature. So on my way down to Paraguay, I actually picked up one of Dr. Andrew Weil's book. At the time, it was Spontaneous Healing, and I devoured that. And that was really my first foray into realizing that I wanted to learn more about natural medicine. And when I was down there, I taught cooking classes with the women and natural farming, and we actually grew stevia and exported it to Japan and the United States. And we had a medicinal garden and a community garden amongst all the farmers in my community. I literally lived in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I lived on a dirt road. I pulled my water from a well. I took bucket baths for two and a half years. I used a latrine. So it was really, you know, back to the basics. But it was really, besides probably what I'm doing now in my clinic, it was the best experience of my entire life of living very simply. And, I had a huge garden and I grew all kinds of vegetables, and there, it was amazing to walk out. Of course, it was all organic, to walk out outside my house and just open up my little garden gate and pick everything that I needed for lunch for this huge salad, and to have it be fresh. I mean, literally like picked right then, and organic. And it was amazing. So, I did learn, quite a bit about natural medicines and the remedies that the, native used, because they had very little access to medical care, and I really obviously learned a lot about myself, and then organic gardening. It was fabulous.
So cool. I'm really interested in how, when you said that things were really kind of simple there, and you very simple living. So you talked a little bit about the food aspect of it, the sort of organic food, and how that kind of your past, growing up, and then also there sort of shaped some of the stuff you would eventually get into. But is there any other kind of things that not related to food about what the simplicity was like? Like, was there something, were there stress levels? Was there something different about sleep there?
Well, it's very interesting. When I was going down to the Peace Corps, my mother, who has passed now, but she was an amazing woman and very creative. And she had this idea that she would have a little tape recorder and I would have a little tape recorder, and we would record tapes and then switch them back and forth so we could hear each other. Well, she never really followed through on her plan, and I thought it was ridiculous, but I immediately fell in love with it. And I have all these recordings of my time down there, because I would have no one to talk to. I would, at night, the sun would set, and I mean, I did have a light bulb in my house. And I lived on the land of another family, but I did have my own house. And so the sun would set and it would be pitch blackout. And so there were these frogs behind my house that were just a symphony at night. And I have all these recordings of these frogs singing at night in the sky. I mean, the stars, I've never seen such stars, because we were there was a lot of land between each house, and not every house had electricity, and we're talking 20 houses or something within a span of, you know, miles. And so the stars were unlike anything I had ever seen. But I think the thing for me was really valuing writing. I read a lot, but I also, it was 2 hours by bus to get my mail. Wow. And seven hours. This was before the internet. There was no email, was just coming out. There was, so basically, I mean, I didn't know how to email, and there was one computer at the library in the Capitol. No cell phones, nothing. So to talk to my family, I would have to travel 7 hours in two different buses. So I wrote a lot of letters, and a lot of people wrote me letters. And it was very interesting to get to know my family and friends in a vastly different way, because you write things I found that people were much more expressive and open in writing than they would have been on the phone. And so I just remember, you know, learning, you know, my aunt had gotten a degree in social work and I had never known that about her, but, you know, she was writing all about that to me in a letter. And it really, it also really sort of differentiated, you know, your real sort of friends and supporters versus those that weren't, because we're busy, right? But those that really spent, I obviously had all the time in the world to write letters. But the people who actually really engaged and wrote me back, it took our relationship to a very different level. And that is probably one of the things that I treasure the most. And what I really treasure is that both of my parents kept all of my letters and then gave them back to me when I came home. So I have, you know, boxes full of my letters that I had written to them, which was really special.
Oh, nice. I love that a different way of knowing about someone comes out when you sort of like slowed down and wrote these letters. So it's so cool. Very, very cool. So just to kind of track us a little bit here. So you were there, and then was medical school after that?
Medical school. So I while I was in the Peace Corps, I decided that I wanted to go into medicine. And I thought that I wanted to go into naturopathic medicine after learning about the medicinal properties of plants. And so I came home with the idea that I would go to naturopathic school. But I had been a psychology major, and so I had not done any of the prerequisites for medical school, biology or physiology or physics or any of those things. So or chemistry, I had to go back and do those. So I'm from New Orleans, but when I got back from the Peace Corps, I moved out to Seattle with the idea that I might go to Bastyr University for naturopathic school, and also UW, University of Washington, had an excellent medical school. And so I thought I would just move out there, take all my prerequisites, which I did at the University of Washington, and then I would discover or decide whether it was traditional allopathic medical school or naturopathic medical school. And I was working for some physicians while I was out there, and they were doing a study, and they had hired naturopathic physicians and regular MDs to be part of this study, and they were paying the NDs or naturopathic doctors half of what they were the MDs. And it's not so much about that, but I just thought in my mind, well, if they both have are doctors, and this is the state in which this school was founded, and if they're not getting paid the same, then I'm wondering if they're respected the same. Right. And this was the home of this school, you know, a very, very well-respected school. And I didn't figure I'd live the rest of my life in Seattle. I figured I would, you know, move closer to home like I am now. And so I just kind of thought, if this isn't even, you know, seen as equal footing in the state of Washington, how is this going to be seen, you know, wherever I choose to live, which would probably be the South, which is where I'm from, which is already going to be more conservative and stuff. So I realized that probably just wasn't the right fit for me.
All right.
And so I ended up going to allopathic or MD school. And when I went back to New Orleans, which is where I'm from, excuse me. But with the intention that I really knew that I ultimately wanted to do something holistic or natural. And so I was the president of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Interest Group. I sort of resurrected that. I took all my electives with alternative practitioners. And then my fourth year of medical school, I actually went and spent a month with Andrew Weil. He has an integrative medicine rotation that you can do out at his program in Arizona. And when I was out there, it was my fourth year, and so I'm at the place where I apply for residencies, and I applied to both family medicine and emergency medicine. And I applied to family medicine thinking that I would, you know, do that and then go do Andrew Weil's fellowship. And then I also applied to emergency medicine because of my interest in international health after being in the Peace Corps. I thought, you know, if something wasn't a good fit for me, I could always fall back on emergency medicine, and then that would bide me time to really figure it out. And after being out there for a month, I just realized that too wasn't the right fit for me. I didn't feel like, as much as he has done so much to bring, you know, alternative or integrative medicine to the forefront and to mainstream, it really wasn't getting down to the root of you know, what was causing medical problems. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't the right fit for me. And so I actually canceled all my applications to family medicine programs and decided to do emergency medicine, figuring again that intuatively I would find, you know, or that I would find what I intuitively knew existed, but I just hadn't found it yet.
So, Amy, I'm interested in this question. So right now there's more and more people are getting interested in sort of more holistic versions of medicine. So there's one side that's sort of extremely sort of science-based, and they think that sort of anything more holistic is usually sort of quack science. And there's a side that's a little bit more open to sort of, let's say, alternative medicine. And I'm just wondering, for those of us who haven't gone to medical school, since some of your protocols are so heavily focused on, you know, what we consume, what we eat and things, can you just give us a little snapshot of what medical school is actually like?
Oh, wow. I mean, for me, it was so hard. I mean, I went back later in life. I was in my 30s when I went. My mother had recently passed from pancreatic cancer. I had been in the Peace Corps. You know, I already was just coming in with such real life experience that then to go into this system that was so black or white and so based on, you know, if a study hasn't been done about it, if a drug, you know, doesn't solve it, for me, it was very difficult because I knew for me, it was ultimately a means to an end. And so, you know, just coming in older or just coming in from the Peace Corps or just coming in having experienced, you know, the death of a loved one or just coming in, you know, having an alternative mindset, any one of those things alone would have made, you know, and then just medical school in general difficult. And then you sort of put all of those together. It was soul sucking for me. And I think that that's why part of the reason I ended up with an autoimmune disease. And people often come to me asking my advice because they want to be where I am. I mean, now I'm so thrilled I did what I did. I mean, I have the credentials I wanted to have. I have, you know, the knowledge that I want to have. I mean, I couldn't be happier doing what I'm doing, but I certainly paid some big prices to get here. And so when people come and ask me for that advice, you know, I really have to say, like, I had laser focus to know that I wanted to ultimately be doing exactly what I'm doing. And if you don't have that, and are you willing to, you know, sacrifice so many things to get there? Because it's not easy. I mean, they don't pave the road to do something different, you know, very, very easily. And so there are so many ways that people can help people heal that don't require an MD behind their names. And so I really try to talk to people about what is it that they ultimately want to do? Because there are other ways to get there without having that MD. Now, again, I am more than thrilled that I have mine, but, you know.
Gotcha. Well, then, as you said, you know, one of the things when you were in medical school that maybe because either of the stress of it or that it was a challenging experience, that might be one of the reasons why the autoimmune condition came up. So let's talk a little bit about that, because I know for a lot of us, especially who are working kind of in this field, we have come from, I mean, what's interesting about your story is that you had a whole history even before that. And for a lot of us, we kind of got deeply invested in wellness and the world of functional medicine, which we'll talk about soon, because of some health conditions. So can you tell us a little bit about your condition?
Yes. So mine was called or is called Graves' disease, which is an autoimmune disease of the thyroid. So the one that most people are probably more familiar with is Hashimoto's, which is typically is an inflammation of your thyroid that ultimately destroys your thyroid and your thyroid becomes underactive. That's the most common form. Mine actually was overactive. It's far less common. So I had antibodies and inflammation going on in my thyroid that made everything in me overactive. So I was losing weight. I was eating a lot. I was having insomnia. I would go down the stairs and my legs would tremble. I was losing a lot of muscle because I was just burning through everything that I was eating. And really what ended up driving me to the doctor is I would have this tremor of my hand whenever I would reach out my hand. And then I started having panic attacks as well. In medical school, I was listening to lectures and I would just feel like the room was closing in on me. And so I ultimately went to my doctor who thought that I was responding to stress of medical school and thought that I was taking on the symptoms that we were learning about in medical school and it was all in my head. And I made her know for sure that I knew it wasn't in my head after having survived the Peace Corps and the death of my mother. I had never responded to stress in this manner. So I requested a full workup and then she called me back about a week later and apologized that, you know, they did find that my thyroid was overactive and it was attacking itself and that and that I had something called Graves. Now, with Graves as opposed to Hashimoto's, it's harder to treat. You know, your options in conventional medicine are to take some pretty harsh drugs that suppress your thyroid from making thyroid hormone, or you can have your thyroid taken out, surgically removed, or you can swallow a radioactive pill called iodine-131 that really kind of, it blows up your thyroid. It just destroys it. And so knowing my philosophy on natural medicine, I didn't do anything for a while. And then I couldn't stand my symptoms. And so I then chose to try Chinese medicine. And that had me doing all kinds of fermented foods and lots of wheat and some really horrible tasting herbs every day. And that wasn't doing anything. In fact, my symptoms were kind of getting worse. So I ultimately decided to, I reached out, we had family friends with Dr. Andrew Weil. I reached out to him. He didn't know of any natural ways to approach this. And I really reached out to every resource that I had, and nobody had an alternative for me, a natural alternative. And so I ended up taking the medicine to shut down my thyroid production. And within a month, I started feeling really bad. So I went back to the doctor and I was feeling horrible. And he checked my liver, and my liver was beginning to destroy itself or be destroyed from the medicine. So my liver enzymes were getting elevated, and it's called toxic hepatitis. It's literally one in a million people can have a reaction to the medicine, and it destroys your liver. And I was having that.
Wow.
So I was ordered to bed rest, and then I was just so depressed and trying to get through medical school. And I had to sit out for a couple of weeks and let my body heal. And then ultimately, I opted to have my thyroid ablated with the iodine-131, so I don't have a thyroid anymore.
Wow.
So I'm need to take thyroid medicine. And now, knowing what I know, I've actually helped a woman recover from autoimmune, from Graves' disease. That's part of my mission, is to help people. I help people recover from Hashimoto's all the time. Now that I know what it, now it's, getting off the gluten, probably likely getting off all grains and legumes, healing your gut. And these people, I just see their antibodies drop and they get off medicine, and it's pretty amazing and powerful. But again, Graves can be very difficult. But the only Graves patient that I've had, we have successfully reversed it in her, and she's not on any medicine. She came in on that same medicine that I was on initially, and we were able to get her off of it, and we've kept her off everything. So,
well, what's so cool about hearing this is that I know when I'm working with clients, often they're coming to us because they've gone to other doctors, and either the doctors don't believe them, don't believe their symptoms, it's all in their head. And it's really interesting that you sort of went through that entire experience. So not only did you have this connection to doing different diets, vegetarian at one point, using Chinese herbs, moving through a bunch of alternative modalities, and at the same time going through this autoimmune condition, I can see why. I know just personally you've told me, you're working with some of the most difficult cases, and you actually sort of thrive with that.
I do. The sicker the better, I say, just because it's a challenge for me, and I love a challenge. I love puzzles. That's probably why I went into medicine and why I love functional medicine, because it's really a puzzle. But it's also people who, like myself, are willing to do anything. And the fact that somebody's there believing them. I never tell a patient it's in your head. I might say I've never heard that before, but I believe you that you're telling me that that is doing this for you. I had a woman in the other day, and she was on and just bashing all the doctors that she had been to before. And I said, look, either we can spend your visit bashing everybody you've been to and how horrible they were, or we can just talk about you. That's conventional medicine. I know. I was initially a product of conventional medicine. I get that that's what they told you and how they approached you. It's not a surprise. So we can just move on from that and focus on you here now, today, and get you better. Or we can, stay in the past and talk about how terrible that situation was. It's like, what's the point? Let's get you well, because I'm here, I'm listening, I believe you.
So that's perfect. And that's a perfect sort of segue into, after that and all, then you eventually, and you talk about this a lot on your site, especially on your blog, functional medicine. And when functional medicine is just fascinating, the world of it. And just for sort of listeners and all, I often place functional medicine. So you have sort of alternative therapies that are often very far out and have very little science backing. And then you have the side that's so overly focused on studies that they often don't believe patients when they come in with symptoms. And then functional medicine seems to find this nice balance in between the two.
Yeah, I never really feel that anything I'm doing is alternative. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really feel, you know, functional medicine is viewing each person as an individual. It is, you know, looking to the root cause rather than treating symptoms like we're taught in medicine. It uses real state-of-the-art laboratory testing. It uses, obviously, food as medicine. I mean, if anything, we're taking things away from people. We're really looking for, you know, it was our belief that everything really boils down to inflammation. That autoimmune disease that I had was inflammation. And so where was that coming from? You know, I can tell you for me, it was coming from a leaky gut. It was coming from food sensitivities. It was coming from gluten. It was coming from heavy metals. I had stored, you know, mercury from a certain genetic predisposition that I had towards that. So it's never really one thing. And it's usually a lot of different pieces of a puzzle. And that's really what I like about it. Really putting those pieces of the puzzle together. And a huge part of that is really listening to the patient. When you come to see me, you see me and my nutritionist, and I spend over an hour with you, and I would say at least 40 minutes or more of that appointment is me listening to you, of you telling your story. And that's after you've already filled out a 35-page intake form that I've read over before you come. So I sort of have some sense of what's going on, but then I really have you tell your story in your own words, because when I do that, I'm able to really hone in on putting the pieces together of, oh, well, you had reflux when you were a baby and you were formula fed, and that might've been your first sign of a dairy sensitivity. Oh, you know, then you used to get, you know, earaches. Well, that's another sign of a dairy sensitivity. So I can really, and then you were on a lot of antibiotics. So that might've been the first foray into, you know, creating your leaky gut. And so really, in that visit, I'm interjecting with how I'm sort of seeing those pieces beginning to come together. And then the patient's like, oh, wow. Like it all makes sense now. I can see it.
So Amy, I know that my experience early on with sort of conventional medicine doctors where I'd go in and they would ask, you know, whatever the symptom is and try to treat that. I still have a hard time myself believing that in medical school, they're not looking for the root. Do they think they're looking for the root and they just call it, and then functional medicine calls it a symptom? Or I just still have a hard time believing that in medical school, and maybe I've just been around the functional medicine world too long because doctors actually spend time looking for maybe what causes what's going on. But I still have a hard time believing that in medical school, there's not this focus on the root. Is there focus on nutrition at all in medical school?
No. I mean, it's so fast. I mean, again, you know, I'm whatever, 10 years out. So it something may have changed, but I'm not that far out, or I may not even be 10 years out. I'd have to calculate it in my head. But, you know, in functional medicine, we view the body as a whole. And intuitively, I knew that going into medicine, just growing up and things that I read, it like made sense. Nobody is questioning in medical school that you learn about the cardiovascular system. And then the next month, I mean, you know, your pathophysiology book is broken down into different systems. Now we're going to talk about the endocrine system. Now we're going to talk about the neurologic system. Now we're going to talk about the, you know, gut and the gastroenterology system. I mean, nobody is talking about, let's talk about the whole body, or, okay, maybe you need to learn these individual systems. And then the final chapter is, how do they all interconnect? There's no final chapter. Nobody goes over the how they all interconnect. In fact, they're even different professors for each one of those systems. And they're not even talking to each other. And nobody is questioning that we're learning these systems. But that goes right along with how medicine has become very fractured, right? If you have a problem with your stomach, you go to the gastroenterologist. If you have a headache, you go to the neurologist. If you have you know, a thyroid problem, you go to the endocrinologist. And nobody wants to, you know, be dealing with the other one's quote unquote problems. And so it that is medicine. It, you know, when I tell people that it's not their doctor's fault, in many ways it's not. I mean, one could blame them that they haven't then questioned the system like I did, but it's the problem lies in how we as physicians are taught. I mean, now the problem is much larger than that of how do drug companies play into this and then, you know, whatnot in hospitals and whatnot. So, I mean, it's not just the school, but that is the primary place that it is starting is in exactly how we're taught. And we're not taught to listen to patients anymore or even barely do a physical exam. We're taught to how to interpret labs and imaging. So it's
you made sort of a clear picture of what it's like there. So I'm wondering then, if one moves into functional medicine like you've done, what does that require? And then what does it sort of mean now to be a functional medicine doctor?
Yeah, so for me, again, because I came into this with this intuition that this was a means to an end for me, and I think that I already thought a lot like this, it really wasn't a big shift for me. I mean, when I first heard about functional medicine and when I first started learning functional medicine through the Institute of Functional Medicine, it wasn't a big leap for me. I mean, it wasn't a big leap at all. It was just like, oh yeah, okay, I got it. I already knew that, but now here's somebody putting it together for me. And so for me, I caught on to it very quickly. And so, but there are other people who are coming into functional medicine much later in their careers, right? I mean, I basically got out of residency, worked in an ER for 2 years, and then immediately went into functional medicine. There are people who are coming into functional medicine because they're burned out, they're realizing that their, you know, practice isn't what they wanted it to be, or medicine isn't what they wanted it to be, and it's 20 years later. And so they're really ingrained in that. And not that obviously they want to get out of it because they're choosing to go study functional medicine, but it's a whole new way of thinking for them. I mean, it's a lot of rewiring and reprogramming and relearning. And, it could be difficult because that is vastly different than how they were taught or even practiced for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But again, for somebody like me, or maybe somebody who has the approach of me that quickly, you know, for whatever reason, either goes into it knowing they're going to do this or comes out of it very quickly burned out and goes into it, you know, if you have that aptitude, it just makes sense. I mean, it to me, it just makes common sense that, of course, what you're eating could affect how you feel. I mean, that to me is just common sense. It's like you're saying, we're both so ingrained in this world of functional medicine now that, and many of my friends, you know, are in this world as well. And so when I go out to eat or something, we're all getting gluten-free, we're all getting dairy-free. And so it's not, you know, until I kind of even remove myself from that and maybe go out with new people that it's like, oh, wait, I'm really, you know, much of the world doesn't view it the way that I view it. And it can be an eye-opener.
So I want to give listeners to a little another taste of functional medicine. And you were saying that functional medicine looks at the body as, you know, one whole body. Is there any other sort of big taglines for functional medicine? There's one that I think of first off, and it reminds me of what you were just talking about going out to eat, you know, maybe not having dairy, not having gluten, being aware that food is information.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little about that? Then maybe, are there any other big ones that if someone is new to hearing about functional medicine, think, okay, it's about, they definitely look at the whole body, they actually spend more time with you, and then food is information. Is there any other big ones that are sort of like taglines we could think of when we think of functional medicine?
I think everyone is an individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how I respond and what's the right thing for me is, you know, maybe vastly different than for you. I mean, there may be some similarities. Food is medicine. Besides the food is information, food is medicine.
The individual, I got to stop here because the individual one, it sounds so simple. And yet what you talked about from medical school, it seems like such a huge paradigm shift that everyone is different and that their responses, their symptoms might not need the same drug or the same whatever.
Absolutely. Or I mean, I hear the story every day of people coming in and saying, you know, I took this medicine and I had this reaction. I know it did that. But, you know, the doctor is telling me it couldn't have done that. It's not one of the, you know, reported side effects. And it's like, well, you know, if you tell me that you're you took this and you got this rash or whatever, I believe you. Let's, you know, let's not do that. I mean, that's one of the core principles of what I do in my clinic, particularly when we're going through an elimination diet, a comprehensive elimination diet where we're getting out toxic and inflammatory foods, is I tell people, your body knows better than any test. And yes, we can do food sensitivity testing, but you're going to come back and really tell me what the food did for you. And you're going to tell me what you're sensitive to, because your body knows better than anything else, and better than any test. And that probably is the primary thing that we teach people, is to listen to their body. And then that can be applied to really any scenario. If you view everything as energy, that you can walk in a room and feel an energy and think, this isn't a space I want to be in. Either they're people that energetically you're not feeling, you know, aligned with, or there may be, you know, an environmental, who knows what, toxic mold or something in the environment that doesn't resonate with you and you need to get out. So back to your food is information. There is, you know, what we've now come to be termed as nutrigenomics, which is how food can influence our genes. And I like to tell people, I mean, I grew up, you know, with the saying in around my household of, you know, is you are what you eat. That, I think that was big in the 70s. And I like to tell people, I mean, I used to kind of, you know, okay, I get it. And so I'm going to eat my healthy food, but it didn't really, really sink in that our bodies are machines. And everything that we put in them is really meant to fuel a machine. And you can eat all the right things, but if you are not digesting, absorbing your food properly because you don't have enough digestive enzymes, or you're on an acid blocker, so therefore you can't break down your proteins, or you have infections in your gut, you may not be able to digest or absorb or break down all those little particles of food to the place that you can digest and absorb them. And that's really what I tell people, is that you are what you eat, but you are what you digest and absorb. And then what you absorb, then all those little particles go in and can influence our genes. I mean, they turn on reactions in our body to give us energy, to keep our brain functioning, to keep us from being anxious or depressed, to actually, we now know, even turning on and off genes, turning on the diabetes gene, turning off the diabetes gene, turning on, you know, these autoimmune markers, turning them off. So it's really powerful. And I really think science and hopefully medicine are going to be going to how important the gut is, and how hopefully someday they'll get into how important food is.
Nice. So Amy, now I was thinking that you have this great line, speaking of food and all, but you have this great line on your website that talks about how, you know, not only are you applying functional medicine to your patients, but it's clear that because of your history and the autoimmune condition that you had, you apply these findings and all to your life as well. So what you were just mentioning, do you recommend, and we'll get more into this in future podcasts and all, but do you recommend, you know, a certain kind of diet across the board? And what is your sort of, just so people have a sense, what does your kind of diet look like now?
Well, it's really kind of funny because, you know, after being a vegetarian for almost 27 years.
Wow.
And eating lots of brown rice and lots of tofu and lots of beans over the years, and of course wheat and dairy, I now don't eat any of those things. So I eat more of a paleo type diet, where I'm eating, you know, I do eat red meat, chicken, fish, shrimp, lots of vegetables, and fruits and nuts and seeds. It's not that I won't. I mean, on occasion I'll have a gluten-free pizza that has, you know, maybe some goat cheese on it. That's like three times a year. But it's not that I have a problem if I eat rice on an occasion. But, you know, coming from somebody who lived that way, I have nothing in my pantry. I eat all fresh food. And I actually wrote a blog on this because people are so sort of fascinated by it and kind of walked you through my day. So I'll do that here quickly, which is I have a smoothie almost every single morning, a green smoothie. I eat a lot of spinach and kale. I just find that's such a great way to get those vegetables in and barely even taste it. So it's usually nuts and seeds and some almond milk and lots of green kale and spinach, and then usually some berries. Lunch today was a kale salad with grilled chicken on it. Obviously, I haven't had dinner yet. I usually have a green juice in there. If I can do that, I try to juice once a day as well in the afternoons, my afternoon snack. And dinner, I have some chicken thawing. So it'll be dinner, you know, chicken and some veggies. So that's it, you know. And dark, I love, you know, everybody's like, oh, you don't have any vices. Well, I mean, I don't really, but dark chocolate is definitely one. Organic, you know, 80 or 90% chocolate is organic dark chocolate is my vice, and lots of water.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, you know, one thing that's so cool about what you just said is that you're very clearly living all the things that you're talking about, which is, I know just in my experience with most doctors, a very rare thing. They'll recommend, and most doctors I've been to don't recommend anything about food anyway, other than the general idea of, well, just eat healthy, you know. And we all have an understanding of what that means. And what's cool about what you said is that, and it's definitely something I definitely want to explore as we explore your work and the Myers Way, where you put together a whole program for people, just how the idea of just healthy eating and eating healthy, there's a lot of, not, I wouldn't say complexity, but there's a lot of intricacies to that. And there's a lot of different things you can do. And you can be eating what most people think is healthy, but you're still being triggered all the time.
Absolutely. And I just want, you know, anybody listening to this podcast, that's not, you know, the way that I'm eating may or may not be the goal for you. So, you know, we do have our program called the Myers Way, which we have all of my patients go through when they come to see me, and my nutritionist walks them through that process. And we actually have created it as an ebook that is available on my website that now anybody from anywhere can do. And in that, we have you take out the toxic and inflammatory foods, but we do allow you to have grains. So quinoa and brown rice, and even, you know, beans and legumes. So not everybody needs to go to what someone might call an extreme that I'm on. I've just found for me with my autoimmune, that really tends to be the best diet for me. But we don't have, that's not where people start when they come in my office. So I don't want people to feel overwhelmed or feel like, wow, you know, what is there to eat? There's plenty to eat. But we do get people off of, you know, gluten and dairy. And then if those aren't problems for them, they can go back to them. Though most of the people that find their way into my office, you know, as a whole, typically those two foods are problems for them. It may not be for everybody out there listening, but they are very, very inflammatory foods for, I think, most people because of, you know, how we've altered the, you know, dairy cows and how we've altered the wheat. But anyway, I just didn't want people to feel overwhelmed by, you know, how I eat as that's the end all be all for everybody, because I do. As I've been saying, I do with my patients as well believe, you know, that everyone's an individual and there isn't one right diet for everybody. And we just need to find what's the right diet for you personally.
Yeah, that's cool. Because it sounds like how you came to your diet came over, you know, years of tweaking and figuring out what works. So it's cool but it's cool. I just love that you're open enough to share exactly actually what you do. And that's basically what you do. You know, I've talked to a lot of other people who can't really say what they do because they're kind of all over the place. So it's nice to know that just hearing from you that you have a kind of a pretty good structure that you really stick to. So I mean, Amy, in this today, just chatting with you, it's like it's clear your passion, your, as you called it before, like your laser focus. And I'm excited, and it's encouraging, I think, for the future of health, knowing that there are doctors out there like you. And I kind of wanted to kind of zoom out for a second and ask kind of the big question as we and finish up here, just this big question of why do you do what you do?
Because I am clearly so passionate about it. I mean, I really have goosebumps right now and kind of tears in my eyes. I suffered. And I don't have a thyroid. I mean, if I have any regret in my life, it's that I don't have a thyroid. And your thyroid controls every aspect of your body. Which I thankfully don't really ever do, but if I were to get a cold or I have a day where I'm more stressed than another, I don't have a thyroid that gets to kick in and take over on those days that are outside the norm for me. I take a standard amount of medication a day because I don't have a thyroid. And if I could prevent anybody from ever having to be in my shoes, that is my mission. And so I love helping the people who are sick and getting them well. My other passion is when I have a woman sitting in my office and her mom had autoimmune and she's there with thyroid and she has two girls at home. My passion really is in educating the mom about the things that she can do with dietary guidance with her children so that they never end up in my shoes or her mom's shoes or her shoes. And so it's really, that to me is the future of medicine. And that is my passion, is helping not only the people who are sick to get well and to know that there is another route besides conventional medicine, but also all those innocent people sitting at home that have clearly some genetic predisposition through their family to end up with an autoimmune disease, to educate the parents so that hopefully those children are never in my shoes or any of the other people's shoes who I've helped. Recover from autoimmune.
Awesome. Amazing. Thanks so much, Amy.
Thank you, John.
You can stay in touch with Dr. Myers by signing up for her newsletter on her website, dramymyers.com, or connect with her on Facebook or Twitter at Amy Myers MD.